On this episode of Skeptico, Andy Paquette brings us an interview with parapsychology legend Stanley Krippner.
Now, in your own work, you've been studying dreams for the most part for Yes. the majority of your career. Do you feel that the case for precognitive dreaming is proven?
No, I don't think anything in science is proven. Science is always open-ended. There's always a chance of revising scientific theory based on new data.
Now, of course, that would work both ways as well, wouldn't it? So what you'd really be talking about is what does the currently available information indicate?
That's right.
And in your case, from what you've seen, what do you think the currently available information indicates?
I think you could make a strong case for precognitive dreams.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on today's episode, we have a couple of interesting interviews from Andy Paquette. I think it's all pretty self-explanatory, so let's get right to the interview. Today, we're joined by Andy Paquette, who is, of course, a former Skeptico guest and is also the author of Dreamer, 20 Years of Psychic Dreams, and How They Changed My Life. Now, Andy is joining us today because he recently attended the 2011 Study of Dreams Conference in the Netherlands, where he was also a presenter. And while he was there, he was nice enough to snag a couple of interviews for us, and he's here to share them with us. So, Andy, welcome, and tell us what you've been up to.
Well, I just got back from a few very beautiful sunny days in Kerkrade, which is a little tiny town in the Netherlands that basically as its centerpiece has this enormous old monastery that I think was built about 1,100 years ago, something like that, where we had the IASD conference, which is the first time I've ever been there. And one of the things I wanted to do, if we're no other reason, but just to see what would come of it, was to see if I ran into anyone who would agree to being interviewed for Skeptico that I happen to think might be interesting to interview for Skeptico. And as a result of sort of being there and having things to do and not having things to do at certain times, I finally ran into a couple guys who I thought were worth interviewing. It was Dr. Stanley Krippner, who actually was somewhat of a target because I wanted to interview him from the beginning, and two other guys I hadn't heard of before, but who were doing a presentation on quantum mechanics as an explanation for certain types of dreams. And since that's a topic that crops up on Skeptico fairly often, I thought, well, let's talk to these guys and find out what's going on, especially because, and I'm just going to admit this to everybody, I didn't know anything about quantum mechanics. I've read about it. I've seen some of these explanations, but somehow they all went over my head. I figured I'll just talk to these guys and get it all sorted out once and for all. And then for all those people on the forum who likewise didn't really understand the argument, they'd know what it was also. So that was the main thing I wanted to do.
Great. Why don't you set up first and tell us a little bit about who Stanley Krippner is, and then we'll go ahead and play your interview with him.
Okay, well, Dr. Stanley Krippner has been researching dreams for about 50 years. I said that in the interview, and he didn't argue with me. I think that's about the right number. I believe he started in the 60s or so. I think he's the founder or the president of the Saybrook Institute in the United States, which studies dreams. He's done a lot of work on paranormal dreams. He's written lots and lots of books. He's also been a co-author on, I think, at least a dozen others. His most recent book is Debating Psychic Experience. It's a collection of essays by various skeptics and proponents of psychic or paranormal studies. So that's Stanley Krippner. Sorry for the long introduction.
No problem. Here we go.
Okay, so well, I'm here today with Dr. Stanley Krippner of the Saybrook Institute, writer of numerous books on the subject of dreams. In particular, he's written a number of books about paranormal dreams, and he's just recently come out with On Debating Psychic Experience, which is a book that includes numerous articles by skeptics and proponents on the subjects of paranormal phenomena in general. And this is Andrew Paquette for Skeptico.com. Dr. Krippner, I wanted to start just by asking you, do you feel that as far as anyone who has actually looked at the data is concerned, the argument about whether or not paranormal phenomena is genuine is over.
No, of course not. In the field of controversial science, different people can make different judgments about the data. And the controversy will not be over until enough evidence, one way or the other, is accumulated so that there is no more debate. And even then it won't be over. Take a look at the theory of evolution. As far as I'm concerned, the evidence for evolution is overwhelming. And it's something that I don't think even deserves an argument. However, there are some people who do not accept the evidence for evolution, who think that the evidence for evolution is badly flawed, who have other explanations for fossil evidence and for biological evidence. And so they would tell us that the debate over Darwinian evolution is not over. So in many ways, it depends upon a person's perspective, and one must look at the credentials of the persons making the argument. Now, I don't think the credentials of the people making the argument against evolution are very impressive. Another example would be global warming. Most of the people, like myself, who think that global warming is a real phenomenon would say that the evidence is overwhelming. However, there are a few people with very, very solid credentials who do not accept the evidence for global warming. And so that debate is still going on at a higher level because of the small group of people with good backgrounds in biology, geology, meteorology, who do not accept the evidence that the Earth is getting warmer and warmer and that human activity has something to do with it. Now you get into a field like parapsychology and the debate is wide open with outstanding people on both sides of the argument who take different positions.
Let me ask you something about the connection between biology and consciousness, which seems to be at the heart of many contra arguments regarding parapsychological phenomena. For instance, we had some gentlemen today who were talking about quantum mechanics and how that can explain things like telepathy and precognition. Do you feel that such arguments are actually undermined by data put together by people like Dr. Ian Stevenson, which tends to suggest an external consciousness, non-body-based?
Well, I see no conflict between biology and non-local consciousness. I think that biology can be at the base of all consciousness, whether it's local or non-local, internal or external. So I personally don't see the argument. However, I would say that some friends of mine would see an argument, and they would say that if something is not biologically based in the way that they look at biology, it's a something that cannot be seriously considered or accepted.
Do you have a personal opinion on whether consciousness is actually a brain-based phenomena or if it's external?
I think it's both.
Now, that's interesting. How do you explain that?
Well, of course, consciousness is brain-based. I think that one can explain a great deal of what happens in consciousness by looking at the substrates in the brain's neurology and neurochemistry. However, remember that there are many people who look at brain-based consciousness as something where quantum mechanics is interacting and that there's actually quantum activity within the microtubules of the brain. And whenever you bring in quantum mechanics, you open the door to non-local consciousness. And you open the door to an explanation of, as you say, Ian Stevenson's work, telepathy, clairvoyance, and other phenomena as well. So, again, it depends upon how solid a person's argument is and whether their argument covers the bases and explains all of the phenomena that they are trying to explain.
I want to make one clarification there, because you mentioned Ian Stevenson's work with telepathy, which I am familiar with, but the Skeptico listeners have also been debating his work on reincarnation quite a lot, which it seems may actually be a stronger argument against a physical-based consciousness. Do you have an opinion on that? Provided, of course, that one accepts Stevenson's interpretation.
I think that Stevenson's work is very impressive, and he's not the only one who has found these examples of people in this life who claim to remember incidents from a past life. However, I don't use the word reincarnation. I think that the information about past lives might be a form of what we might call post-cognition, of coming up with information after the fact, going into the past to get information that's not ordinarily available.
Are you thinking of this as some kind of telepathic information gathering then?
Closer to telepathy and clairvoyance, yes.
Okay.
And I don't really see it, therefore, as being esoteric in terms of a person's karma, a person's progression from past lives. All of that is a little too esoteric for me. I would rather stick to the simplest explanations possible for work like Stevenson's work on people who remember incidents from somebody else's life that they have no ordinary way of knowing about.
Let me ask you this about Stevenson's work. As a scientist yourself who's been working for, I think, gosh, it's an awfully long time now, at least 50 years.
Yes.
You must have formed some kind of an opinion of Stevenson's credentials. How do you feel about those?
Well, of course, Stevenson has excellent credentials, and many of the people who don't accept Stevenson's work also have excellent credentials. So here we're dealing with a debate between people who both know what they're talking about. And that's one reason that the debate is very, very interesting to me, because the people on both sides of the debate really are very well versed in biology and in memory and in human capacities.
What would you say to someone who complained that it was possible Stephen overlooked such explanations as a translator colluding with the informant? Do you find that to be a credible type of explanation?
I would ask them for an example. I would say, can you spell out how that would be the case? Because there have been so many translators and so many informants, hundreds of them in Stevenson's cases. He has in his database at least 500 cases, and you'd have to say every one of those translators is in collusion with every one of the informants. And that, to me, is really stretching the limits of credibility.
Now, in your own work, you've been studying dreams for the most part for
yes.
the majority of your career. Do you feel that the case for precognitive dreaming is proven?
No, I don't think anything in science is proven. Science is always open-ended. There's always a chance of revising scientific theory based on new data. So, in the English language, I don't know what it's like in Dutch. In the English language, I don't think you should use proof when you're talking about science. You can use the proof when you're talking about logic in proving theorems. You can talk about proof when you're talking about whiskey and the percentage of proof that indicates how strong the whiskey is, mm-hmm. but you can't use the word proof when talking about science.
Now, of course, that would work both ways as well, wouldn't it? So what you'd really be talking about is what does the currently available information indicate?
That's right.
And in your case, from what you've seen, what do you think the currently available information indicates?
I think you could make a strong case for precognitive dreams.
Okay, and in the case of other types of paranormal phenomena, would you say that the currently available information is generally favorable towards a paranormal explanation?
First of all, I don't use the word paranormal because I think that all these phenomena are normal. I just don't think that we have the equipment or the theories to explain them at this point in time. So I don't like to use the word paranormal, but that's a personal preference. I would say that the evidence is stronger for some phenomena than it is for others.
You've after publishing your recent book, Debating Psi Experience, have you managed to get any feedback on that from the both the critics and the skeptics?
Yes, I certainly have. Many of the skeptics and critics and counter-advocates like the book very much. They think that the proponents have put forward the best possible case, and I think that the critics have put forth the best possible case. And the people that I've talked to about the book think that it is very solid, and that it is the, as one of them said, the best collection of articles within one volume that will help people to stake out their own position.
Do you find yourself getting trapped into the, or I shouldn't say trapped, but brought into the kind of conversations that you find in that book, oftentimes in your research activity, or do you manage to avoid that just by staying focused on your work?
Well, I don't really make a big point of arguing in favor of parapsychology, because I do think that the critics can make a very strong case. I would much rather argue in favor of Darwinian evolution. I would much rather argue on the issue of global warming, where I have very strong opinions and where I think that the opponents of these positions do not have available evidence. But I think that in the case of parapsychology, it's an issue where I can really see both sides of the question.
I guess the reason I was asking you is that book focuses on the issue of whether this kind of thing is genuine, whereas it seems to me that your research interests are less about whether it's genuine than what it is and what's going on. Is that correct?
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how do you feel about the fact that certain types of skepticism, which I think you might have even called scientism, actually...
I haven't, no. Some
okay.
people have, but I have not.
They stop debate at the question of whether it's genuine and will
yes.
not proceed further. Do
right.
you see a way around that so that things can proceed?
When a person has a closed mind, there is no way around it, because you cannot open a mind that is closed. I think one has to look for people who are open to debate, open to consider possibilities, and open to enter into dialogue.
Okay. Well, we didn't have very much time to talk today, but I really appreciate your being willing to participate.
Well, I would urge your English language listeners to go to Amazon.com and order our book, Debating Psychic Experience, edited by myself and Harris Friedman, with contributions by outstanding people on both sides of the fence.
Terrific. Thanks a lot, Dr. Krippner.
A pleasure, Andrew.
Okay, so Andy, let me start off by asking you to maybe provide a little bit of a definition on what you mean when you say paranormal dreams.
I'm talking about dreams that clearly are not a simple fantasy invented by the dreamer. They're dreams that are connected to something real. Okay, and by something real, I don't necessarily mean something physical that can be verified. Sometimes I think it's something spiritual that is equally valid, even if it might be harder for some people to accept that. But most commonly, I'm referring to things such as a precognitive dream. So you have a dream about a fire in a barn, and it happens a day or a week later, something like that, with enough specifics that you recognize the event as the one you dreamt about. Another kind is also called an out-of-body experience or remote viewing. And that's where you dream about something that's happening roughly simultaneous with the dream. And what you do when you come back from a dream like that is you remember what you saw around you, and then you're able to validate that by contacting one of the people who were present. And in rarer cases, you can actually validate it in other ways without having to ask somebody else. You just go to the location, and you can see whether the environment tallies with what you remember.
One of the things that jumped out at me the first time I heard this interview, and it just had me kind of pounding on the table because it reminded me of, oh, so many skeptical battles along the same line, and also of the current little tiff or topic we've seemed to be coming to again and again on Skeptico, and that's this push for the middle, or this forced middle, that I perceive Dr. Krippner is kind of reaching for. And I think the best example in the interview I wanted to chat with you a little bit about was the Ian Stevenson research on reincarnation. And you did a nice job of pushing him on that and bringing up some of the skeptical objections that perhaps Dr. Stevenson was duped, if you will, by translators who were colluding to give to change the stories of these subjects who had reported these reincarnations, and the translators were just feeding him a line is basically basically the idea, and he says, hey, that's just nonsense. It doesn't make any you couldn't put that together in a way that really makes a lot of sense. And then later Dr. Krippner says, but I'm not willing to go and accept that the most parsimonious, the simplest conclusion from this research, which he admits has to be respected based on the credentials of Dr. Stevenson and by the way that he compiled the research. So the conclusion, he says, is we can't assume that these people really are talking about a reincarnation. It might be what, like some super psi thing where they're accessing telepathically the Akashic records, which if you just think about it is such a just silly kind of explanation.
Well, yeah, look, to me that's my daughter heard that thing and she said, is he kidding? this does not sound like the simpler explanation. To me that looks like somebody, I don't know, trying to get up a greased slide, anything to get away from the explanation they don't want it to be. I don't understand why the reincarnation idea is so repellent to certain people, but it definitely is. The idea to me, you see, the thing is, for what he is suggesting to work, some little kid has to use the super telepathy to not only access memories from some person he doesn't know, who doesn't know him, who's some distance away, but because that person only has access to, say, one fact that the kid happens to mention to Dr. Ian Stevenson, he's then got to go out to some other person who also probably doesn't know the other guy, but knows the deceased personality. He has to do this over and over again with maybe 50 or 60 different people in order to accumulate enough information to say the things that the kid says. I just find that really, really strange, ridiculous, and far too complex to agree with. I just think, you know, hey, the simple thing is the kid says, I was this guy. Fine. I'm willing to accept that. I mean, the kind of information these kids are coming up with, especially when you combine it with the stuff you get out of Gurney and Myers and all those guys from the British Society for Psychical Research, I think it makes a lot more sense.
Agreed. So let's move on then and talk about the second interview that you had. Let's tee that up a little bit.
All right. Well, it was Mark Hagen and Rito Holzner, both of the University of Zurich. Rito Holzner is a physicist, primarily a laser physicist, but lately his work is in quantum physics. And Mark Hagen is a clinical psychologist, also from the University of Zurich. They're both on the faculty there, is my understanding. And they've both been exploring the brain and consciousness. And apparently Mark Hagen is actually a frequent visitor to these dream conferences, so they're both studying dreams. And for the weekend, they were talking about Pauli and his research into dreams and the difficulties he had because he wanted his Nobel Prize, so he didn't feel too comfortable talking about his basically Jungian research. So that's where they're coming from. Now, my interest in talking to them is I wanted to understand what the quantum explanation was for paranormal dreams, because I had read on Skeptico several times, in fact, that quantum mechanics were brought up in a number of different contexts to explain certain types of psi phenomena. Now, the type of phenomena I know the most about is paranormal dreams. And I was at a dream conference, so I said, well, let's just nail down this one quantum explanation anyway and see what it sounds like.
Okay, Andy, well, I'm going to play a little bit of this interview, really just a few minutes, because I think actually the conversation we might have about the interview might be more interesting than the interview itself. Here's a little bit from that interview.
So the thing is, I'd like to introduce Mark Hagen and Rito Holzner. Why don't you guys tell me what part of your background I should mention in the introduction?
I'm from Canada. I have a master's degree in clinical psychology out of the University of Zurich, and that's where I met Rito. He was a physicist. I think that he was working on his doctorate at the time when I met him. And that was over 30 years ago, and we've been talking about the brain and how it works from a classical physics perspective, from a a quantum physics perspective, from a computer analogy perspective. We've talked about all sorts of different perspectives over the years of how the brain might be creating our reality here that we see here today, and also how it might be processing during dream states.
Yes, as you mentioned, I'm a physicist, experimental physicist, so my main experience is in laser physics and nonlinear dynamics. Mm-hmm. So I did my PhD on chaos theory and so on. We produced actually the first, we call them NMR laser, because it was not a laser with light, but mm-hmm. with radio frequencies. And we could prove all these theoretical issues, and we could see this frequency doubling, transition to chaos, that kind of thing. All classical. But then I moved into lasers, where you, of course, when light is involved, there's quantum physics nearby, mm-hmm. mostly. Yeah, and as you mentioned, I'm also interested in other things, among them how the brain works, and I just consider the dream as part of many other ways the dream can function, you know. Do brain work at night under certain mm-hmm. conditions, and we have some ideas that the dream work is mainly kind of used for modeling whatever is around, mm-hmm. coming to conclusions which may act like a feed forward on your future life, mm-hmm. as well as a kind of organizing your past, making sense of it. Because it's very much the same as you run computer programs, for example, for weather forecast. Mm-hmm. Just a bit more complicated.
Okay, Andy, so I think this plays out pretty much the way you described it. Let's dig in there a little bit and talk more about this idea that quantum mechanics works well as long as we don't look at any data that doesn't violate the basic idea of it. Because I think that's so well said. And a few episodes back on Skeptico, we interviewed Dr. Stuart Hameroff, who is a very nice guy, and I appreciate him joining me and all that stuff. But it seemed like we're headed kind of the same way. And actually, then I had a follow-up discussion with him via email when I interviewed Dr. Lakhmer Chalva. And you know, again, it's like they have these great ideas until you say, yeah, but here's the real hard data, the difficult data that we're trying to figure out. And they go, well, yeah, it doesn't really handle that case. And it's like, well, then aren't we just playing around here?
Yeah, that's kind of the way it sounds. It's like when by the way, they mentioned Hameroff quite a few times. But for telepathy, they were looking at out-of-body experiences and remote viewing. Well, let's just say remote viewing as a kind of telepathy. And telepathy, the explanation could be explained by quantum entanglement. And quantum entanglement is when you take two particles and they're made at the same time and they have the same properties, but they're separated, they remain entangled. So the thing is they, if you measure one, you still get information on the other. But the problem with the idea is that they do something called decohere really rapidly, and if they're at any distance from each other or they interact with anything else. So what they were basically thinking is that, well, if we extrapolate, and here we have what I would consider to be a very large extrapolation error when you consider the size of these particles compared to the events they're comparing them to, but you've got one thing that is like a mirror of the other thing until it's so far away that other things get in the way, okay? And I just was like, I said to Holzer, how on earth can you make that fit these larger scale events? And he's like, oh yeah, well, of course it wouldn't work because you have decoherence at that point because it gets too far away and it no longer reflects the original value of the original particle. Also, the kind of information the particles had, it was very limited. It was you have a spin, you have an orientation, you have a speed, this kind of stuff. It wasn't the life history of a leaf of grass or the you know where your grandmother buried her pearls. That kind of stuff you just didn't have. Now, his idea was that you could make a quantum computer out of this because you could use these as like bits of information, and then you could manually force it into a configuration that would allow you to store information.
Yeah, but before we even get too far down that path, because to even entertain that silliness kind of gives it a legitimacy that I just don't think it deserves. Moreover, you know, what they're really saying is, hey, isn't this kind of an interesting mystery over here, this thing called quantum entanglement? And doesn't it kind of sound a little bit like this? I mean, in that respect, the skeptics really are right when they kind of talk about these folks sprinkling the quantum mechanic magic dust on it and saying, hey, doesn't this really work? Of course, where the skeptics are wrong, and even I can't believe they went there, is that the where quantum mechanics has really led us is that these quantum effects have now been demonstrated in larger and larger entities, more than a particle, and even in biological entities. There's even a batch of neurons that have demonstrated the quantum effect. But it doesn't matter when we look at the data that so strongly contradicts the basic idea that mind equals brain. And I think that's why, you know, we've had that discussion before, and the discussion has come up on Skeptico. That's why I think we always wind up there. And that's why we wind up with, as you were talking about, after-death communication, or we wind up with near-death experience, because we go, wait a minute, forget all that. How can you have this if you don't have a brain? And clearly we have consciousness without a brain. Shouldn't that be the starting point for these discussions, rather than to spin off for paper after paper and debate after debate, just conveniently, as you said, looking away from the data that's kind of most relevant to the hardest question?
I tried, believe me. I was sitting here thinking, I've got to ask these guys about consciousness. And you know, I did. I asked them several times trying to get their attention onto that. And actually, Hagen took most of those questions, but he really wanted to just say, well, consciousness is the big enchilada, and then he'd make a joke about it, and then all of a sudden, I'd have no answer. At the end, I think it was Holzner who said that the brain creates the mind, and the mind creates consciousness, which basically completely ignored the comments I was making about reincarnation, for instance, and the after-death communications and so on. But conveniently for all of us, they'd never heard of that research. I mentioned Dr. Ian Stevenson, and it was like I'd mentioned some, unknown person to them. I had the impression they had no idea who it was.
Willful ignorance.
Yeah, I'd have to say so. I mean, if you're going to be researching the brain, consciousness, and dreams and things like that, I would think it'd be kind of hard to avoid mentions of the reincarnation studies, because those are pretty prominent in the paranormal literature. In fact, I have to say, my opinion, Stevenson's books are a must-read for anybody interested in parapsychology at any level.
It's really disappointing on the whole. I mean, both these interviews, not the way that you did them, of course, which was very nice, but, you know, someone like Stanley Krippner, who so many people revere and look up to because he's been around so long and he's published so widely, it's just so disappointing to see that they just can't really come to the real issues. And it makes you wonder what the prospects really are for progress in this field. Progress. Or maybe it's just the old one funeral at a time thing about progress.
You know? No, I don't think it's one funeral at a time. I think it's worse than that, I'm afraid. Because the thing is you had fantastic data running around in Victorian England also.
Great point.
That it only went so far. I think that only as many people as can handle it will bother to look at it and appreciate it for what it is. I really seriously doubt this is going to become popularly recognized in the West anyway, without some kind of spiritual revolution. And I think that's what it would take. I think it would take something that can fight back against the advent of the wonders of technology, which have basically superseded all interest in spiritual subjects.
Well, Andy, I think we're going to have to leave it there, but it was certainly great for you to bring these interviews to us and share them with us. And in our little dialogue before, you told me that you might have one or two up your sleeve, so we'll look forward to those as well.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Alex. It's a pleasure to be on again, and sorry for the long-winded answers.
No problem, Andy. Thanks again to Andy for bringing us those interviews today. If you'd like more information about this show or any of our previous shows, please visit the Skeptico website. It's at skeptiko.com. You'll find links to all our previous shows, an email, Facebook link to me, and a forum link where you can join in the discussion with other listeners and tell us what you think. A couple of interesting shows coming up. I think you'll enjoy them. Stay with me for all of that. Until next time, bye for now.